Okay, ladies and gentlemen, again, more Myra McComo's here, some over there, but let's start, please. Someone just mentioned to me that in order to read these Myra McComo's, you have to have what he called, in the French translation, iron eyes. I suspect that he's right. Part of my problem is that I'm married to an optometrist. I'm always trying to scare up some business for her. No, just kidding. Frankly, what I wanted to do was give you one set of Myra McComo's, one sheet, double-sided, that you can take with you. There are many more, and I will be happy to tell you in the course of the talk where you can find them if you'd like. The subject for today is one that's interesting for itself. Any discussion of Yemot HaMashiach, of the Messianic era, always provokes some interest, as evidenced by the people who've shown up. But I'd also like to contextualize today's talk in two other ways. First, to try to develop with you in the time that we have a brief schema of how we shown him, the different approaches that we shown him have to Yemot HaMashiach. We can't do all of it, but we will try to set it up and diagram it in a way that will be helpful to you. And the specific focus of today's talk, which really is to get to the position of, as the title indicated, Rishonei Ashkenaz. Ashkenazic Rishonim, Balei HaTosfot if you prefer. We're talking about the meat of the medieval period, the meat of the period of the Rishonim, 12th century, 13th century. And what we're going to find here, I hope, is something slightly unusual as follows. We talk about the Sephardic Rishonim in this period. The Rambam, who died in 1204, the Ramban, who died in 1270, finding hashkafa, whether it's philosophy or mysticism, finding Jewish thought, finding Jewish belief in their writings, is not so hard to do. The Rambam is a master craftsman in this regard, even though his Mor Nevuchim is a very difficult work, but if you want to find what Rambam holds about Yemot HaMashiach, not so hard to do, and we'll spend a couple of moments ourselves just reviewing that when I begin, as a foil, as a point of comparison for the Rishonei Ashkenaz. Even for the Ramban, whose corpus is somewhat more discursive, if you will, and somewhat broader, if you want to know what the Ramban thinks about Hashkafa issues, Yemot HaMashiach, Olam Haba, there are specific Sfarim of his that can be consulted. His Perush al HaTorah will yield a lot of this material. But for Rishonei Ashkenaz, for Balei HaTosfot, we're talking about here Rashi, his students, his descendants, and their students and descendants throughout 12th and 13th century in both Germany and northern France primarily, much harder to put our finger on what they believe. And that has to do not only with the fact that Tosfot as a genre is a Shas commentary, even the halachic works of the Balei HaTosfot are really Shas commentaries. It's not just a matter of genre, it's also a matter of approach. Balei HaTosfot, as Talmudists, tend to swim in the sea of the Talmud, and they don't often tell us where they themselves are holding, to use a modern English word. We don't always know what they think for themselves, because this Gemara goes this way, that Gemara goes that way, this Medrash is here, that Medrash is there, and their job is to conflate, to put as many balls in the air as possible, and to really mix and match. It's very hard to pin them down if we try on matters of Hashkafa. Not, God forbid, that they didn't have Hashkafa, of course they did, we're dealing with Gedolei Hador here in every sense, but it's not always easy to diagnose, to tell where they are. And recently we've tried, a number of scholars have tried to do a little bit more of this, and interesting things have emerged. For example, on the subject of anthropomorphism, whether God has some kind of human form or some kind of form at all, where the regnant view is or was that Balei HaTosfot think, yes, God has some kind of godlike body. They read Midrashim and Talmudic texts literally. We find that that's not true. There's a tremendous spectrum and range within the Balei HaTosfot. I can tell you where you can find some of this if you're interested. At the end, I'll make some bibliographic announcements. But it's hard to find it because it's all over the place. You really have to go with a very long list of texts and a lot of time to find it. Similarly, even in terms of something like attitudes toward Aliyah Eretz Yisrael, I think someone gave a talk recently, the Stern College campus, talking about Reb Chaim Cohen, that Baal HaTosfot at the end of Masechet Ketubot, who seems to have a very negative view in his time about certain aspects of Aliyah, and he's been dismissed as a Talmid Toeh, as an erring student, somebody copied it down wrong. Of course, it's not true. We know both in learning and in scholarship that there are different positions within Baalei HaTosfot that support both the positive and less positive views, but they have to be found. So some of this is a matter of detective work, and some of this is simply a matter of methodology. But what I'd like to do today is try to get us to know, or know more about, where the Baalei HaTosfot hold on the issue of Yemot HaMashiach. And what we'll find is not a spectrum. We won't even find, as with Aliyah, that it's France versus Germany or Germany versus France. We're going to find that the Baalei HaTosfot are almost the mirror opposites of the Rambam. Now that, again, is not so surprising, as we'll see, although I don't think they're playing off the Rambam so much, neither is he playing off them, of course. But the fact that we can find this united a position amongst Chachmei Ashkenaz everywhere suggests that we're on to something. Where they themselves don't say, well, wait a minute, but there's another Gemara, there's another Medrash, let's go this way, let's go that way, as Tosfot typically does. They don't do that here. And so I think we'll discover, I hope, in the time that we have, we'll discover something very important and I hope rather interesting. Those of us who do this professionally know that being a before-lunch speaker is not as good as being an after-dinner speaker because lunch is yet ahead of you. So we'll make it for lunch, don't worry. And I hope you've been fortified by the little kibud kal, and let's get started. The way to start is to look at this issue in the Rambam, and to use that to build our vocabulary and our conceptual framework as well. I think many of you have an idea about what the Rambam holds here in terms of Yemot HaMashiach. In a word, the Rambam's position is that the Messianic era will require no change of what Rambam, what we'll call Teva, no change of the natural order. Whatever happens in Yemot HaMashiach will happen on this world, and the physical conditions of this world will be exactly the same as they are now. And the Rambam trumpets that by playing up very much. Playing up is too mild a word. The Rambam goes to town with the statement of Shmuel, of the great Amora Shmuel, Ein bein olam hazeli mot hamashiach, ela shiabud malchiot bilvad. The only difference between this world and the Messianic era is the issue of rulership and domination of other nations. Namely, in the Messianic era, the Jewish people, the nation of Israel, will run itself as a Torah nation. But in all senses, as we'll see, but other than that very major change, there will be no changes in terms of the natural order. Miracles don't have to occur, and indeed Rambam seems to think that miracles won't occur, particularly in the Messianic era. Of course, one of the issues of this great political and spiritual freedom is that the entire Jewish people will be able to learn properly, do mitzvot, they'll all get along. Of course, many people would say that's the greatest miracle of all, but that is part of Teva. The human being was constructed with the possibility of learning and doing mitzvot and getting along. So miraculous in terms of what's gone before it, but not in terms of the natural order. And the Rambam does this. It's interesting, if you look both in the first Maramakom, I'm on the side with my name on it. That's how you go to side one. Rambam Perek Tet of Hilchot Shuvah Halacha Bet, and also in Perek Yud Aleph and Yud Bet in Numbers 2 and 3 in Hilchot Malachim, at the beginning and the end of Mishneh Torah, not by accident. Hilchot Malachim is the real end. Hilchot Teshuvah is toward the beginning. It's clear the Rambam wants to circumscribe Mishneh Torah with this point. The Rambam makes Shmuel into the winning Shita. And he even quotes, as he does, Amru Chachamim. The Chachamim said, Yemot HaMashiach, Olam Hazeh, Olam Min Hagon Oheg, and so on. And as we'll see in a moment, it's been pointed out, Shmuel here is something of a Da'at Yachid. He's something of an individual opinion. Amru Chachamim, the Chachamim said, again, the French question, Velech Chachamim, where are all the tens of Chachamim who hold this way? The fact is, again, as we'll see, many Amoroyim don't hold this way. The Rambam Kedarko Bakodesh knows the winning Shita when he sees it, and he gets right onto it, and he trumpets that Shita all the way. And so at the end of Tshuva Tet Bet, Aval Yemot HaMashiach Hu Olam Hazeh, Olam Kimin Hago Holech. The sun will rise, the sun will set, There will be rain, depending on where you are, a little snow. Everything will run exactly as is. Ela shamachut tachzor li Yisrael. The Jewish people will regain their rulership, and that's not just the person of the Melech, of course, Melech HaMashiach, but that is all the series of things that he will do as this leading Melech. And again, if you take a look at number 3 for a second, Perek Yudbet Halacha Aleph, in source number 3 on the right hand side, Al Ya'ale Al Halev Shibimot HaMashiach Yivatel Davar Mimin HaGo Shel Olam. Don't think that anything in the natural order will change. Or that the order of creation, the daily order, the natural order will change. Right? The world will run in that naturalistic way. Now that leads the Rambam to a number of important corollaries. In fact, if you take a look, just follow where I just stopped, in Perek Yudbet Halacha Aleph, the Rambam learns everything naturally. And he knows, therefore, that in Yeshayahu Perek Yud Aleph, the pasuk that we read not so long ago says that Gar Ze'ev in Keves, that when Mashiach will come, assuming you interpret Yeshayahu Yud Aleph messianically, as most Mefarshim do, talks about a whole change in the zoological structure. The prey and the predators will all make shalom. Ze'ev in Keves, right? The wolf with the lamb, Gidi im Namer, right? The goat with the leopard, again, all these nice animals, or tiger, however it goes, and even the Ashiashayo Negahur Paten, even the enmity, the primordial enmity, it seems, between man and the snake will be canceled, right? Little children will play at the snake pit, at the snake den. If the Rambam says that nothing unnatural will occur, how does he explain all of that? So here he goes. He says it openly, just continuing where we were in number 3. V'zeshin ne'emar b'Yishayahu, v'gar ze'ev in keves, v'namerim g'di yirbatz, mashal v'chida. Not exactly allegorically, but certainly metaphorically. Namely, inyan hadavar shiyu Yisrael yoshim lavetach im mishay akum hamishulim kize'ev v'namer. The Rambam, who's very interested in science, of course, says Tanakh does not give you the zoological report. We're not getting a report from the botanists or from the zoologists. We're getting here a conceptual idea that B'nai Yisrael, who are compared always, Seh Pezurat Yisrael, the loyal flock of God, whether it's sheep, kibasim, whether it's chagadia, whatever it might be, that department, the prey, the classic prey in this world, will become now equal, if not more equal, than the Umot HaOlam, who are nimshalim to various animals as predators, right? So whether it's Ze'ev or Namer or Chazir Ya'ar, you pick it, whatever it may be, it's not an actual change in the natural order. It's simply an idea that the Jewish people will no longer be dominated by other nations. Now, even though that is unusual, we can call it highly unusual, it's not technically unnatural. The notion that Jews and the nations of the world will get along, or that Jews will have an advantageous position, is something that's possible in the realm of the natural order. It's just what's new here. And again, in Halacha Bet, Amru Chachamim in Perek 12, Ein Bein Olam Hazel Imot Mashiach, El Shibud Malchiyot Bilvad. Again, Chachamim, hundreds, thousands, it's Shmuel, okay. And now the Rambam says, he starts to talk about Gog and Magog here. And you'll say, well, Gog and Magog, now we're getting someplace. Gog and Magog, that's not natural, that's Star Wars. That's, you know, some kind of cataclysmic events. We all know the Med Rushim, things are going to fly up and down, and rockets and bullets, and who knows, Echvesvos. Now the Rambam will lose his conservatism and will surely tell us. Of course, he does not. And he says, Yiraemi pshutan shel divrei ha-nevi'im, shebitchilat ha-mashiach tihye milchemet Gog u'Magog. Okay, let's go. The Ram says, but wait a moment, let's not talk about Gog u'Magog. Let's talk about Eliyahu. Now, I don't think the Rambam thinks that the Milchemet Gog u'Magog is supernatural either, but he doesn't even want to talk about the warfare part. For those people who are getting excited and ready to see, you know, how many planes, who's going to knock down or something, even naturally, Rambam says, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the spirituality. V'shekodem Milchemet Gog u'Magog, ya'amod navi li'asher li'Yisrael v'achinotam. Will come Eliyahu, and he will do nice familial, spiritual things. So even when the Rambam starts to get close to action, even if it's a tliha teva, zelo action, zayimot hamashiach, leave that for him. Let me tell you, Jewish people, what's in it for you as a people. So the Rambam, not only does he never get off the natural line, he consciously veers away from these discussions. Yes? Oh, Rega. Lady asks a wonderful question. That's why I take wonderful questions, because it's very helpful. What about Tchiyat HaMetim? So in a word, and I'll prove it to you, for the Rambam, what is the connection between resurrection of the dead, Tchiyat HaMetim, and Yemot HaMashiach? On the TV they see me here, right? Efes, necessarily. The Mashiach does not have to be involved at all in Tchiyat HaMetim. It's certainly not in his CV, as we'll see. It's not in his Vita. There's a possibility backdoor. Now you'll say to me, that's unusual. That's the Rambam. The Rambam holds very much from Tchiyat HaMetim. It took many writings and many fightings, that's a rhyme, for it to be proven. He certainly holds from Tchiyat HaMetim. That, Rambam says, is the only nes that's part of this whole eschatological process. The only thing that will happen miraculously, somebody's calling into object, the only thing that will happen miraculously, shelo kefi hateva, is the nes of Tchiyat HaMetim. And that's why Rambam, who takes lots of heat, biyamav, and like any great Jew, even after he's dead, Nebuch, he's still being attacked when he can't answer, took heat throughout, 88, heat throughout. His answer is, you want to know what I think about Tchiyat HaMetim? I'm being colloquial, of course. Very simply, look under Nun for Nes. Zelo teva. And it's certainly not the Mashiach's job, as we'll see in a moment, necessarily. Right, and by the way, let me add now, because we'll need it in a moment. Even Olam Haba, for the Rambam, there is a teva. There's a natural order of Olam Haba for him. Namely, for the Rambam, the radical position, somewhat radical, except for the Rambam, so it can't be that radical, the Rambam's position that Olam Haba, below Gufu Gvia, no bodies, no physical existence, therefore no eating, no drinking, as Chazal said. In other words, just as this world is completely teva, there are bodies, people are born, people go off to die, things happen, good things, not such good things, etc. Yom v'layla lo yishbotu, right? That's the pattern. And when you're in a physical world, physical things happen, and Mashiach will function in a completely physical world. Tchiyat HaMetim is the exception, is out there by itself. When you get to Olam Haba, Hakol Kifi Tiv'o Shel Olam Haba, everything functions according to the natural order of Olam Haba. No bodies, nothing physical. Tzadikim Yoshvim Nenim Yiziv HaShchinah. The communion of the active intellect, of the person, of the neshama, however you'll call it, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore there is no teva. Not because it's unnatural. No flying angels in Olam Haba for the Rambam. Now, to us, we may not like that, but that's not how it goes. So, teva, Tchiyat HaMetim in a box by itself, which the Rambam strongly holds from as an Ikar HaEmunah, but it's got its own rules. Indeed, let's look at Mashiach's taktziv. Let's look at his CV and his budget and his parameters. We have it. The Rambam says in Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Dalid, Im Ya'amod or Ya'amid Melech Mi Beit David, Hogeba Torah Va'osek B'mitzvot Ki David Aviv. When you will find, this is in source number 2 at the very end, going into source number 3. If you will find a melech of Davidic descent, who is, first, a great Torah scholar or a great Torah learner, and someone who's involved in mitzvot, like David was, meaning, not just he's involved, but because of him, others are involved. Kefi Torah shebichtav v'shebishval peh, according to all parts, the panoply, the full measure of the Torah, V'yikov kol Yisrael elech ba'u lechazek bidka. And again, the Mashiach cannot be a wallflower. He's got to be someone who will try to inculcate, as we'll see, has to have success. Trying is not enough in having others follow these lofty goals. Yilachem milchamot Hashem. Again, he'll fight God's war. Rambam, who's in that war? I'm not telling. I don't talk about war, says the Rambam. Make learning not war. Harei zeh b'chezkat shehu Mashiach. Okay, somebody who has these successes is Baderech. right? We would say in a different sport, he's a contender, right?
Im asavi hitzliach,
if he not only starts all of this, but he succeeds, he's really got the operation going in this way, now it gets better, uvana mikdash bimkomo, and he succeeds in building the Beit HaMikdash, the Kibet Nidchei Yisrael, and he brings all the Jews to Eretz Yisrael, Hareze Mashiach Bevadai. Now, interestingly, no Tchiyat HaMeitim in here, you tell me it's an argument from silence, but what else is very important here? Who's building Beit HaMikdash according to the Rambam? Mashiach and building company. Right? He's also a master builder, right? Namely, the Rambam is well aware of the approach in Chazal that how will the third Beit HaMikdash appear? Right, the flying prefab model, as I like to joke about it, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Mishik, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will send Beit HaMikdash miraculously from heaven. For the Rambam, don't look to the heaven, look to the Mashiach. He will build it. I don't think it means that he will build it himself. He will get the building done. So anything the Mashiach has to do, again, is lefi hateva, right? Kibbutz galuyot. So they keep sending flights. Eventually the flights will, you can do it. You can buy more planes. You can do it. It's possible, right? Okay. Again, nothing in the Rambam goes the other way. In fact, you will search in the Rambam. Let me just mention one other thing explicitly. Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Gimel. In source number 2 at the end, Va'al ya'ale al datcha shehamelech hamashiach tzarich la'asot otot u'moftim u'michadesh dvarim ba'olam o mechayem meitim. Here it's not from silence, here it's explicit. Don't think that the Mashiach has to do anything supernatural, including give us an ot u'mofet. Listen, you're the Mashiach, could you pick a car up or something, you know, with your finger? No, don't ask for that. Ridiculous, right? And even Tchiyat HaMeitim, he doesn't have to do that. Now, the Rambam may leave open the possibility, Ulay Efshar, that he might be involved, but he doesn't have to, and that's explicit, so your question is very much in place. Now, some of you will tell me, oh, but look in source number 4, you'll tell me, we know the Igeret Teiman, and the Igeret Teiman, which the Rambam wrote to the Jews of Yemen, as we know, who were experiencing all kinds of false messiahs and all kinds of, more importantly, pressure from Islamic and other sources. I hear the Rambam says, "V'ha'otot v'hamoftim shiru ayado hein hein arayot al amitat yichuso." He says, "Wait till our Mashiach gets here; he's going to win the contest." 2 points have to be mentioned. Number one, he doesn't say that he must do nisim. Number two, if you're talking to the Tzabrach and the Jews of Yemen, who have had all kinds of claims about this false Mashiach doing that, and this false Messiah doing that, and this Islamic hero doing this, and this one doing that, the Rambam is simply l'saberet ha'ozen, he's telling them, wait till you see how Mashiach hits. He can hit it over the wall. Ze Aleph. I like baseball, you probably learn it shortly. Anyway, second of all, Igeret Teiman, Zelo Sefer Hilchati. Mishneh Torah, for the record, the Rambam is crystal clear. Igeret Teiman is, again, it's the Rambam's Igeret. It's not, hi, how are you, sure as how you're having fun, see you in 2 weeks. It's not that kind of a letter home. It's an epistle. It's an official Rambam letter, but it's a letter with a megama. It's got a goal. It's got a purpose. Right? And Chokrim have debated, won't go into it now, in general, the valence of Igeret Teiman. To what extent is his reasoning there purely halachic? To what extent is his reasoning there more towards the rhetoric side of things? So Igeret Teiman will certainly not topple the Mishneh Torah building. And the other way, if you look at Rambam Perek Chelek in source number 5, again he says constantly, it's all going to be natural. The Rambam, of course, takes up on the right-hand side there in number 5, the very interesting Haggadah, that in the Yemot HaMashiach, there will be gluskaot. Bukalach will grow on trees, and suits, clothing, will also somehow be on the bushes. Maze Omer, Rambam says, metaphor, it'll be very easy to make a living. Right? The Jews will have enough for Shabbos and enough for Yom Tov and enough whatever they need in a much easier way. But that's thanks to the political, the economic, the temporal security that Yemot HaMashiach will provide in a natural way. Okay. That's the Rambam al regel achat. Let me just, before we go to side 2, and this really needs my wife or some other optometrist's help even for me, but you can take these home, these are yours to keep, you can use the magnifying glass and so on. The Abravanel here Mima'aritzei HaRambam. The Abravanel, of course, lives centuries later. The Abravanel is Mimugurashei Sfarad, and of course, as we know, he writes several treatises, not just this one, Yeshuot Mishicho, but several treatises dealing with the Messianic era and dealing with Acharit HaYamin, as we would almost expect. Kidei l'lamed u'lenachein, in order to show the Jewish people that all is not lost. But kidarko, he doesn't do it ra-ra-ra, he does it very substantively. The Abravanel, who is certainly known as one of the greatest Ma'aritzei HaRambam, fans of the Rambam, even Ohadei HaRambam in modern idiom, has two very strong criticisms of the Rambam Shita as we just developed it. Two, and they're really based on the Gemara itself. And again, I'll spare you the reading for now, but just hear it from me, and you can take a look at it in a couple of minutes. The Rambam, he says, has committed two Talmudic, I don't want to say fouls, but two Talmudic stretches here. One is what I mentioned before. Shmuel is mentioned six times in Shas, six sugyas. In four of the six sugyas, other Amoroim are mentioned who hold that Yemot HaMashiach will in fact be miraculous. And this has a lot to do with what were the Nevi'im talking about. Were they talking about Yemot HaMashiach? Were they talking about Olam Haba? Were they tell some of their more miraculous pieces that go with eschatological issues? In four out of six places, the Gemara in effect paskins against Shmuel. That's Ta'ana number one of the Abravanel. Ta'ana number two is related. The Abravanel suggests, without quoting anyone else, Kedar Kovach Kodesh, we'll see, but he suggests that when Shmuel said, Ein Bein, there is absolutely no difference in physical structure between this world and Yemot HaMashiach and physical life, that Ein Bein was a bit loaded, says the Abravanel, because surely Shmuel himself knows sugya after sugya, where in fact there is discussion of miraculous kinds of things that would take place in the Yemot HaMashiach. And therefore, to make a long story short, what the Abravanel suggests is that Shmuel, by agreement and with foreknowledge, is only giving us phase one. There's the phase one Yemot HaMashiach, and then there's the phase two, which in fact the Abravanel calls something like Olam HaNishamot, or something else, Olam HaTechiyah, Tchiyat HaMeitim. Shmuel's only talking about phase one. He agrees there'll be a phase two. In fact, the Abravanel goes even further, and he begins to suggest that even Shmuel would admit that even in phase one there can be miracles, but here's how to cut the miracles. The pasuk in Micha Perek Zayin says, "Ki meitzecha me'eretz Mitzrayim arenu niflaot." I will show you miracles to the Jewish people as I did when you got out of Egypt. So there's the IMM, the in Mitzrayim miracle, and there's the AMM, the after Mitzrayim miracle. Ki meitzecha means IMM. All of the miracles that you saw in Mitzrayim and just coming out, whether it's Kriyat Yamsuf, whether it's the Makot, whether it's the Nifilat Ha'esh, the fire that would come down onto the Korbanot when the Mishkan was started, Parshiyot, that we're just reading now, those miracles already occurred in human existence, and therefore, they're part of the first phase of Yemot HaMashiach. And that's what Shmuel means. It's an Olam Hazed Dika period. Old hat miracles, miracles that have already occurred to the Jewish people, there will be a reprise, there will be a redux. But new miracles, that Shmuel is not talking about, new and exciting miracles, those only occur when? In phase two of Yemot HaMashiach, Tchiyat HaMeitim is a striking example of that. The Beit HaMikdash coming down is a striking example of that. Those are miracles that have never been seen before. And so the Abravanel says, surely Shmuel, it's much more reasonable to suggest that Shmuel is not, as the Rambam argues, giving us a total assessment of the Yemot HaMashiach in its entirety. He is simply giving us what? Some aspect of phase one. Either just the natural part of phase one, the Abravanel wants to push it, and we'll see where he's getting it from in a moment, perhaps, and say that even in phase one, miracles that have already occurred to the Jewish people, that's also part of the Teva. That's also part of the world that has already existed. Okay, so the Abravanel here therefore says the Rambam is a little bit extreme here, and he leaves it with that series of questions. Now, if you flip over to side two,
you have to make the Rambam's main theory
What is that? Does he? The question is, does he decimate the Rambam's main theory? He's certainly trying. Right? And as he's basically saying, it's not that the Rambam is illogical here. He's saying the Rambam is off on sugyot. In other words, number one, why is he making Shmuel so important? And number two, even the fi hasugyot, there has to be a greater balance between natural and supernatural, even within the first phase. So he's basically, interestingly, he's not arguing with the Rambam philosophically, he's arguing with the Rambam in Lomdus. He's arguing with the Rambam in Shas. And, you know, that's something which the Rambam can say. I explain Shas differently, so it doesn't ruin the Rambam, but it's a pretty strong series of questions. The Rambam can counter and say, no, I believe that Shmuel is much more limited, and I call it as I see it. So you're right, it's not what we call in modern yeshiva language in Israel, a kusha katlanit. It's not what we call a bomb or a killer kasha. And it's not a kasha of which the Rambam can't recover, but it's a serious critique. Yes, ma'am. Very, very loudly, because otherwise we won't hear you. Okay, so 100%, if we had not 57 minutes, but if we had an hour and 57, we would talk about why the Abravanel says what he says, l'shitato. In other words, what's bothering him from his perspective. And Tanya's quite right. Always bring your best graduate students into the room. Tanya's quite right that there is obviously a lot going on with Abravanel. I'm going to make a sneakier point in a moment. I'm going to make a sneakier point that the Abravanel got some of his armament here from our Balei HaTosfot, who I'm going to introduce now. Abravanel is a serial, say this gently, non-citer, yes? Abravanel mentions lots of stuff without mentioning who says that stuff. Now, I don't want to get into a whole discussion here, medieval citation. The Ramban does this to a large extent as well. Abravanel is a master. Again, when you're dealing with Gedolei Torah, Torah is free. Everybody who knows it knows it. It's not who said it, it's what it says. Abravanel here might well be following, at least as part of his cue, some earlier Ashkenazic sources. But Tanya is quite right for another discussion. He's got his own axes to grind. All right. So we leave the first page with the Abravanel, I think, as Rabbi Brinder correctly points out, with the Rambam taking a hit, but, you know, the Rambam, how does it go? Takes a licking but keeps on ticking. He will continue here because it's a question of how to learn the Gemara differently. Good. Side two. Here we go to our Balei HaTosfot. And what's fascinating here, when I found this, I just, you know, it's just, you see it, you say, something is going on here. And that's why I love to give this talk, especially to such a knowledgeable and large audience as this, and the web out there, hi, because if anybody finds any Mikorot and Ashkenaz that don't go this way, please let me know. Kanarfog, K-A-N-A-R-F-O-G at yu.edu. I think the YU Torah already spelled it Karnafogel, it's Kanarfogel, K-A-N-A-R-F-O-G at Y-U-E-D-U. Ring in immediately, you'll be cited. I promise you. Okay, now, not the Abravanel. Now, wherever you look in Balei HaTosfot, you will find a miraculous aspect of Yemot HaMashiach up front and center. So, let me start with a somewhat unusual text, but very interesting one. The Arugat HaBosem, number one on side two, quotes a somewhat unusual figure, Reb Moshe Breb Chazdai. This is a Baal HaTosfot known as Reb Moshe Taku. Is Taku a family name? Is Taku some kind of a description? There is a fascinating suggestion that Taku, he's a German Baal HaTosfot, we know he was the Rav of Regensburg, and he certainly, we have Shelot and Tshuvot from him. We have lost Tosfot that we know that he wrote. They may not have gotten out of Regensburg. There is the suggestion that Taku is a Hebrewization of the German town settlement of Dachau. Now, this is in the early 13th century. In Gullah, strange things happen. Efshar v'Efshar, I can't prove it to you. Doesn't matter. We know that he is a leading German Baal HaTosfot. Again, a lot of his material has been lost. He died somewhere around 1235 CE. He wrote a work called Ketav Tamim, which is mentioned here, and those of you who know anything about Ketav Tamim will tell me, that's an unusual work. Yes, it is, but that's only because we have about a third of it. If we we get the other two-thirds, it will be easy to figure out what's going on, number one. Number two, Rav Moshe Taku interacts with all kinds of Gedolei Balei HaTosfot in his period, and so I don't want to look at him as a fringe person, I look at him as a Balei HaTosfot of importance and greatness. If you read through here, Moshe Taku opens by saying, let's read the first couple of lines together, Shegam l'Shmuel, do you see that? Rav Moshe Reb Chasdai, Chisdai Chasdai, unusual Ashkenazic name, but there it is, Katab Bechtav Tamim, Shegam l'Shmuel, Dafka b'hatchalat ha'geula lo yitchadesh klum. That Shmuel knows full well that only at the beginning of the Messianic age will there be nothing new, he means in terms of creation, in terms of the order of the world. Ach sheneitze mishibud malchuyot. Ach niyeh regilim ulmeidim beruach ha'kodesh. However, there will then be a process. Things will start to let themselves out. Ruach HaKodesh will, and here I emphasize, reappear. Right? There had been Ruach HaKodesh before, real Ruach HaKodesh, it will reappear. Uch nifilat ha'esh al ha'korbanot. The fire will once again consume the Beit, the korbanot. Had that happened before, right? Bayom HaShmini, right? Vateitze esh, had that happened before? Yes, it had. It was miraculous, but it happened before. U'bekiruv shechina ba'amud esh va'anan. As the Pasuk says, כמו שהיה ביציאת מצרים, כי דכתיב, כי מי צאתך מארץ מצרים, ערנו נפלאות. Shmuel is not denying that, he says Moshe Taku. Shmuel is simply what? He's the opening act, or he's describing the opening phase. And then it will proceed further. What will happen? לאחר הימים, מתוספת גאולתנו ואורנו, there will be an increase in the nature of the geula, בירידת בית המקדש, שראה יחזקאל הנביא, which of course never happened to the Jews before. And then he goes further in the next lines and he starts talking about the tzaddikim who will grow wings, and by then already they'll have no need to eat and drink, and away we go. So according to Rav Moshe Taku, which is I think the way most of us construct it, the Rambam here is not what some of us think, right? There's a process, there's an unfolding process from 0 to 100. And Shmuel is simply describing the earliest part of the process. Again, the implication is that even in the early phases, miracles will start to happen. And Shmuel is mudalazeh. He's not describing it, but he knows it. And from there on out. Could Rav Moshe Taku have been the source for the Abravanel? There are phrases that are almost milah b'milah similar, but even if he'll tell me no, it's okay. Clearly, this is what Moshe Taku holds. At the end of this paragraph, you'll see that he, and he's being quoted here, Avraham ben Azriel is a very important parshan of Piyut, a Piyut interpreter who's writing this book no later than 1235, a student of Rabbi Elazar Rokeach of Worms. So when this last line is the Arugat Abos, and when this is still Moshe Taku, he mentions here, and it may be Moshe Taku, that he's upset with the Rambam about Olam Haba. Because how can the Rambam say there are no bodies in Olam Haba? Here he's got flying angels, right? Got people with Kanafayim. If your name is Kanafayim, which means canary bird, you like that. Anyway, Kanafayim he's got, right? Winged people. What's wrong with that? You Rambam, you're no fun. Kehilu. So there's a little bit of pushback on the Rambam, but that's really only at the end. Now you'll tell me, this Moshe Taku is lovely. Could we have somebody we ever heard of? Could we have a Tosfot? In 1 second, just take the question. Go. So what's left to figure out is good. You're gonna like number five in 1 second. But what's left is Shmuel just talking about phase one, part one, you know, or is he saying I'm phase one, part one, but I'm comparing myself to part two? In other words, I'm telling you all the natural stuff quickly because I'm telling you by implication there's supernatural stuff coming, right? Is that what Shmuel is saying? Ein bein meaning for 5 minutes or for 2 years or for 10 years. But it means there's something coming. But let's go further and you'll see something you like, especially number five. Let's look first though at number two. This is a Darmstadt manuscript, meaning a manuscript found in the municipal library in Darmstadt. Don't ask me how it got there. Manuscripts of Jewish writing all over medieval Europe that have been photographed. I saw it not in Darmstadt, I saw it in Jerusalem. in the Machon Katzuni Kitayad, where the State of Israel, again, a nice Yom Ha'atzmut story, not for today, took pictures of all of these manuscripts as they could, and they've collected them. And there's a text called Drashot Shel Melech HaMashiach Gogu Magogu Rav Moshe Mikutzi. Moshe Mikutzi, the Baal HaSmag, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, is already a very well-known northern French Baal HaTosfot, writes his work around 1240. And here, in this particular text, he quotes his Rebbe, Rebbeinu Yitzchak ben Avraham, that's the Ritzvah of Dompierre, brother of the Rosh Mishans, dies around 1209, probably in northern France, possibly in Israel. We know him very, very well. Look what he says. So we've got a German Baal HaTosfot, Moshe Taku on board. Let's go big time France. Ki yesh bet pa'amim yemot ha-mashiach. Mashiach, you know, you get on the bus and it's certain time, pa'amayim, right? If you have somebody with you, right? Pa'amayim. There's pa'amayim yemot ha-mashiach. Charge it twice. One, ha'achat, kodem tchiyat ha-meitim. Ve'achat, lachar tchiyat ha-meitim. Two parts. Very clear. Right? And Mashiach will be in charge of both parts. The implication is part one will be not so miraculous. Once you get to Tchiyat HaMeitim, it's all miraculous all the time. Right? Ki HaMelech HaMashiach Galeh, and he gives you the dating for this. V'yemot HaMashiach Shalachar Tchiyat HaMeitim, he's got dating for that. V'hatzadikim Sheyichyu Ya'alu Kinurim V'yichyu V'lo Yigvahu. Right? Again, there will be eternal life, and even the Ya'alu, they're flying in some way here. Okay. This becomes the position that moves throughout Ashkenazic circles. So much so, let's go out of order for a second. Look at number five. This might explain the absolutely wild, b'ner ha'ot, Tosfot, the shortest ones, always the wildest ones, in Shabbat Taf Samach Gimel. Shabbat Taf Samach Gimel is one of the six sugyas where Shmuel is quoted, Ein Bein. And again, there's another Amoraic position mentioned. I have it outlined for you in the Gemara. We can't read it now, but look at the Tosfot. So Tosfot says, wait a second. Afal gav the hashta ein Yerushalayim ve'ein Beit HaMikdash. Wait a minute. There's no difference between Yemot HaMashiach and now? We got no Yerushalayim, and in those days, they really didn't. And we have no Beit HaMikdash. Ve'ilu Yemot HaMashiach yahakol banui. Banui doesn't mean by Mashiach and company. The phrase banui, and there are other nuschaot here, other rishonim here, banui u'mishuchlal, prefab. It's all coming. We're going to walk into Yerushalayim and we're going to see the Beit HaMikdash. We're not going to build it. We're going to see it because it's going to come down. Tzarech Lomar, watch this, folks. The high aim bein lav davka. The statement there is no difference between this world and Yemot HaMashiach. Lav davka. There are a few differences. Wow. Ze Omer, I think. And by the way, I cut off. There's a little asterisk here. The high ein bein lav dafka is used by Tosfot and six other places in Shas LaHalacha. So it's a strategy they use with other Gemaras. But again, there might be several ways to explain it. The easiest way to explain it is that, again, this Tosfot, which is a 13th century Tosfot, knows the Smag, may know Reb Moshe Taku, and they are quite agreeing that it is impossible to describe Yemot HaMashiach in a non-miraculous fashion. At some point, here the differences are not as fine, here we don't have the timetable as fully done, it's 5-7 words. But clearly this seems to be behind the theory of the Tosfot. To give you some more text to support it, look at number 7. Tosfot Shvuot Av Tekvav, you can't miss. Tosfot is worried about, and it's a sugi that we're going to see in number 6 as well. Let's look at 6 and 7 together, but go 7 first, and we'll go back to 6 and the others. Tosfot is, there's a sugya in a couple of places having to do with Sirat HaOmer. Right? The Gemara comes up with a very unusual possibility that the Beit HaMikdash might be built when? Somehow on the end of the first day of Pesach in Eretz Israel, or in the evening in between, such that the Yom HaNeif, Tet Zayin Nisan, the day which allows Chodosh, will now have a Beit HaMikdash sitting there. That changes the whole way that the new Tavua is allowed. Right? For our purposes today, once the clock strikes Tet Zayin, right? They say Tet Zayin is passed, here we go. If the Beit HaMikdash is there, however, we have to wait until the Omer Karban is brought. So the question that the Gemara wrestles with in a couple of places is, how can you get a Beit HaMikdash built that no one knows about, that's freshly built, on the end of the first day Pesach, which is Yom Tif, in Eretz Yisrael too, right? or the night of Tet Vav to Tet Zayin, which is Ein Bonim Beit HaMikdash Balayla, right? B'yom Himashcha, right? How do you do this? So Tosfot's solution, every place this question is raised, is a very simple solution. Namely, we can't build Beit HaMikdash on the first day of Yom Tov of Pesach. We can't build it at night. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is building it, right? He can do what he wants. Take a look how Tosfot says it, number 7. V'yesh lomar de'aynu Beit HaMikdash la'atid shehu asui me'ilav b'dei shamayim k'dichsiv mikdash Hashem Now, our Tanchuma on this pasuk doesn't have this diuk, although Rashi refers to it a little bit. Again, the pasuk Mikdash Hashem Konenu Yadecha, the futuristic Beit HaMikdash at the end of Az Yashir, not by it 2, but by it 3, will be built by whose hands? Yedei Hashem. The Rambam will say Siyat Dishmaya, Hashem will help the building, perhaps. Says Tosfot, how does that occur? Miraculously. Tosfot has this Tanchuma. They have many citations of Tanchuma that we don't have. They have many citations of many Midrashim that our editions don't have. That's not a problem. Flying Beit HaMikdash is always the Tosfot solution, and more than that, it's always the Tosfot approach. In fact, they got it from Rashi. If you look at source number 6, this is the Sugi in Sukkah Mem Aleph. There's a parallel Sugi in Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed, where Rashi has to solve this problem that I mentioned before. How can the Beit HaMikdash, it's a tough sugya, how can the Beit HaMikdash be built on the first day of Pesach by the end of the day or the night in between? Says Rashi at the very end, I underlined it, I think, Hanamile Binyan HaBanui Bidei Adam. When can't you build at night? When can't you build on Yom Tov? When man is building it. Bayit Rishon, Mishkan, Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni. Again, banui umishuchlal. That's a word pair. Built and spitzed. Right? In other words, all ready to go. All completely perfect. Right? V'hu yigalev yabo mishamayim shenemar mikedash Hashem konenu yadecha. So Tosfot quotes it from Rashi. Here, if you look at my little bullets, again, with less apology to my wife, the optometrist. Here, if you look at my little bullets, there's a Rashi in Yirmiyahu. One of my colleagues, not directly, but in a different article, in fact, Dean Berger, who's the dean of the Bernard Revel Graduate School, my dean, shouldn't get in trouble, he knows what I think here, argued that this Rashi was done to answer a hard sugya. In other words, that Rashi learned the Gemara this way because he had no way out of the Gemara, but it's not clear that's what he holds. Again, it's an interpretational problem. Is this his hashkafa, or is this how he's learning the Gemara? To which I say, but take a look in Rashi in Yirmiyahu, as I write in my scroll there. Lamed Alef Gimel Od Evnech Benivnet Benot Yisrael. Right, the pasuk says you will be rebuilt, says Rashi, and there you can interpret the pasuk 6 different ways. It doesn't have to be about Beit HaMikdash. It doesn't have to be about anything. Rashi says this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu again saying I will build the Beit HaMikdash, and there Rashi was under no exegetical pressure. The sugya didn't make him do it. The pasuk didn't make you do it. Kanireh. That's the Ashkenazic position. Everything about Beis HaMikdash, everything about Yemot HaMashiach is quickly miraculous. Okay, if you take a look at my left-hand scroll there, Sefer Ra'avan. Ra'avan is a successor of Rashi, Rabbi Ezra, Reb Nosson of Mainz. Mid-12th century, a successor of Rashi, same period as Rashbam. And he says in the Sugi in Rosh Hashanah, Ein Binyan Beit HaMikdash Balayla, and here you may have it cut off a little bit, Hainu Binyan Basar Vadam. Man has to listen to God's rules. God can call him automatically. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do something his way with a capital H, he doesn't have to follow the rules. The editor of the Ravan here, an old-time editor, quotes Yerushalmi, Shmarta Mishmarti, and other psukim, which the Yerushalmi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyoch himself says, I keep the Torah too. Says the editor, except when he doesn't have to, he doesn't want to. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu tries to be frum, but there are some times when he has to build the Beit HaMikdash, and he'll say to the people, sorry people, that's your problem, it's not my problem. Of course, to say it in a much more elegant way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the rules, he can change the rules. Interestingly, by the way, what would the Rambam do with this Gemara? The Gemara is the one that says that Beit HaMikdash will be built on the first day of Yom Tov or at night. So if you look at number 8 here, the Meiri, who is a rationalistic cousin of the Rambam, he has a fantastic pshat the other way. If you look at it carefully, here's what the Miri says will happen. He says, how do you get Beit HaMikdash built on the first day, Yom Tov Banach, at the end of the day, O Banach? You got to read it, you can't believe it. Chayn she'ein b'ya Beit HaMikdash b'layla, ha'dichtiv b'yom ha'kim et mishkan, chashash le'beit din to'im, she'tehei chibat ha'kodesh b'viyatan l'kach. The Bezdin HaGadol so much wants to make the Beit HaMikdash, they pass it wrong. Their chiba causes them to paskin incorrectly. Wow. Choice of the Be'iri or Rashi? I vote for Rashi. But again, Rashi says it even in a purely exegetical context, without a purely Tanakh context, without any pressure of the Gemara. Final points here. Rambam did not mention at all Mashiach ben Yosef. That's not such a problem, because Mashiach ben Yosef is only mentioned once in Shas, Sukkah Dafnun Beis. And even there, his role in the Messianic era is not specified. It's mentioned in context. However, in Ashkenazic texts, the assumption is always that Mashiach ben Yosef is coming. What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is any medrashim about Mashiach ben Yosef always involve miraculous milchama. Right? If you bring Mashiach ben Yosef, you're going to have to put up with all kinds of fantastic, kind of almost apocalyptic wars that certainly seem to be connected on Teva. Balei HaTosfot, again, to a man, and if you find any, let me know, who don't, hold Mashiach ben Yosef must come like clockwork. You have it in source number 3 at the top. Our friend Rav Moshe Takunow says Mashiach ben Yosef must be killed before Mashiach ben David comes. For the Rambam, it's not necessary. As I'm sure many of you know, for Rav Sadia Gaon, it's not necessary, but Rav Sadia leaves it as an option, plan A or plan B. Right? If Zohu, Bnei Yisrael, don't need Mashiach ben Yosef, they don't need that phase, we go right to Mashiach ben David someday. So, the mayor of Emenu. If they need Mashiach ben Yosef, and they need that fighting and that defeat of Mashiach ben Yosef to still believe that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save the Jewish people, will they will come out on top, then they will be Mashiach ben Yosef. Balei HaTosfot always have Mashiach ben Yosef. He's there. Tosfot and Erevin in number 4, both in the printed Tosfot, especially here in the Tosfot of Beinu Peretz. Cute sugya, well, not cute, but somebody makes a neder that he will not drink wine on a day when Mashiach could come. So basically the sugya says he can't drink wine during the week. On Shabbos he can still drink wine because Mashiach won't come on Shabbos. Says Tosfot and Tosfot Beinu Peretz, what are you talking about? We have a 40-year warning device. Until Mashiach ben Yosef comes 40 years before Mashiach, Mashiach ben David isn't coming. Let him drink away. It's just the Gemara, folks. Don't do it practically. Anyway, but here we see again, Mashiach ben Yosef is on the schedule, on the Tochnit. Finally, Machzor Vitri, number 9, number 10, and beyond. This approach, so in a word, let me sum it up, and I'll tell you what we didn't get to. Let me sum it up as follows. For every point that the Rambam has rationalistically, that there will be no miracles in Yemot HaMashiach, Tosfot almost the mirror opposite. Again, I don't think because of the Rambam. I think this is a case where this is what their Derech Halim would lead them to. What's amazing is the consistency between France and Germany Tosfot, between what we call Balei HaTosfot and Hasidei Ashkenaz, even Ashkenazic scholars earlier than the Tosfot, Rashi and so on. This seems to be the official Ashkenazic position. This will explain two other unique, or two related unique aspects of the Mashiach according to Bnei Ashkenaz. One is, we just finished Pesach, Shloch HaMoscha. The record will show that Keta, Shloch HaMoscha Lagoyim, it's a tough pasuk and a tough Keta in Machzor Vitri here, which is not that much later than Rashi and his students, late 12th century perhaps. We have a Keta that's even more feisty than the one that we say in the Seder. It originated in Ashkenazic Haggadahs. Sephardic Haggadahs picked it up, but it originated in Ashkenaz. Why? Because again, Sephardic Mashiach is, if you're following the Rambam, calmer. Ashkenazic Mashiach, if you're following the Balei HaTosfot, in a word, a real knacker. Therefore, the knocking of the Mashiach for Bnei Ashkenaz is part and parcel of the picture. Same thing in source number 10, very controversial article that I can't talk about now, but it's been shown that the Zohar picks up Medrashim about the peripheral, that Mashiach will put on a purple garment, the Ketonek Yosef, with the blood of the Kedoshim.
and he will take vengeance from the nations over Mashiach Hanokain, Av Harachamim, right? Malei Gviot, and so on. Mashiach will take that revenge in memory of the Kedoshim, and the blood of the Kedoshim will be his coat of arms. That idea first appears in Sfarad in the Zohar, which in terms of its appearance is late 13th century Spain. As I list here in my pretty clear scroll, it's all over 12th and 13th century Ashkenaz before. In Piyutim, in halachic context, I give you a laundry list of German Tosafists who mention this issue. Again, because the swashbuckling Mashiach is a very Ashkenazic thing, again, it fits well into the pattern. So, well, if you go back to a very wonderful question, this will help us end. If you go back in number 5 to the side 1, the Pirush Mishnayos, Rambam talks about Mashiach dying and his son succeeding him. You ever heard of David Shlomo? This is redux. So in other words, Mashiach will live so naturally, it's possible that Mashiach will come, reestablish the Malchus Beis David, do a fantastic job, follow the whole program, die the Seva Tova, and be succeeded by his son, Shlomi. His son, Mashiach number 2. In other words, continuing Beit David. Let me just finish, and I'll take the questions. We're not going to let people go to lunch. I promised you lunch, I'll give you lunch. What we didn't cover, folks, in Numbers 11 and 12, this opens up, name your favorite Rishon, and name his position in Yemot HaMashiach. We've got now a polar, I don't mean as in bear, I mean as in poles, right? A polar machloket between Rambam and Balei HaTosfot. And again, please write in if you find anybody who's soter, who's out of that pattern, right? Non-miraculous must be miraculous. Flying Beit HaMikdash, Mashiach Ben Yosef, knocking Mashiach, you name it. Where my nose is. Who is in the middle here? Ramban is in the middle, Radak is in the middle, Ramah is in the middle. A number of Rishonim in Provence and in Spain fit in between. I have no time to tell you where, that's for the next talk, but I thank you very much for your attention. I'll take questions, come to me, everybody go eat lunch, enjoy your day, and thank you.